sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again. Because God is a Republican.
Yes, and he loves the children, except for the poor ones. Screw the poor kids. Just mind-blowing. Absolutely mind-blowing. Anyway, love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Lots went on this weekend. Lots to go. Interesting week it's going to be. You had the Comey interview on Sunday. You had the bombing on Friday. Wag the dog. Still looking for the Rosenstein firing. Still looking for all of that. And here to help us work through some of the anxiety, some of the insanity, our good friend Propane Jane. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So did you get to see the big Comey interview?
No, I did not. This is actually probably the most out of the loop I have been in a while. I bought a dog unexpectedly on Saturday.
maybe that's how we find our sanity. We all buy a dog.
The wagging the dog is probably a little bit literal in my sense.
Did you name the dog Wag?
No, I did not. And I also didn't name it Donald or Trump or really anything that has anything to do with politics. So.
Oh, well, that's a good thing. No, I mean, look, everyone needs a day away, and everyone needs a way not to make a bunch of noise in the background.
Yeah, but you know what? I mean, the sad thing is that we sort of predicted a lot of what has happened over the weekend last Monday.
It's true.
Yeah. Or at least, you know, I mean, I guess at this point, instability in chief is even though he's unstable, he's pretty predictable at this point.
But he's using the best words, like slime ball. I'm still stuck on the best words. And now he's gone from slime ball and lion to slippery. It's now slippery Comey. Best words.
I mean, but this is just not the language and just the attitude that you expect the leader of the free world to be having publicly.
Yeah, and we're kind of past that. And this is one of the things that actually Comey talked about in the interview is not allowing this behavior to become something we get used to.
Yeah, I mean, and even though it's something that is happening, you know, obviously every day, I don't necessarily think that people are used to it in the sense that they're okay with it. I mean, I still think it's unacceptable, and for the most part, people are either pointing and laughing. Or face-palming or shaking their head at this.
Or going out and getting a dog.
Or going out and getting a dog, exactly. I mean, you know, I watched a little bit of the movie Dave over the weekend. Have you seen that movie?
I love Dave with Susan Sarandon and Kevin Kline.
It's a great movie. And, you know, for the parts where, you know, the real president was still alive and kicking, you know, he was sort of behind the scenes like a jerk, you know, when he first meets, the impersonator Dave, you know, he's like, wipe that smirk off of your face. And obviously, you know, he goes on to, be having this affair, which is ultimately, how I guess, you know, he ends up having a heart attack and a stroke. But I was just thinking like, I mean, you know, that movie, of course, it's all fictional, but the way they portrayed the real president, it was so unbecoming of a president. And that was even apparent, I think, even in this, you know, comedic movie. And then I just sort of thought for a second, like, wait a minute, like, this is actually, that could actually, with all of this, like, affairs going on and, you know, antisocial behavior that's happening behind the scenes, that could actually be Trump.
So we're predicting an affair and a heart attack and an underground, and then we'll find another orange Oompa Loompa that's 6 foot and 239 pounds. Is that what we're saying?
Maybe I'm just hoping that somebody comes along.
That we get somebody better. But here's the thing, and I watched Dave, and I remember watching the movie going, yeah, the president's a jerk. But outwardly, he did everything that the office,
right,
He was supposed to. He kissed the babies. He shook the hands. He put out the statements. But behind the scenes, he was an a-hole. And look, you could probably look at every president we've ever had. They could be like that.
Oh, totally. But we don't necessarily know about it,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. I mean, if you want to be a jerk, but just honor the office.
He's not doing that.
And you knew that wasn't going to happen. You knew this was all going to be a train wreck. And here we are.
Yeah, we're absolutely here. And, you know, I think that, like we were talking about last week, you know, it's becoming more and more apparent that, you know, his lawyer has actually been, in a lot of ways, kind of responsible for executing this, you know, cover-up of all of the sordid details of his private life. But then also it comes out he's also doing that for various members of the Republican Party. And also we find out today Sean Hannity.
Yeah. It's just, is it me or does this seem really cozy and really coincidental? And then the other thing is, you know, because, you know, I like Comey's assessment and it's not new. It's not original.
Yeah.
You know, we've said, you know, he's acted like a mob boss from the beginning.
Right.
I got a question, what Trump's got on Hannity? What does Russia have on him? You know, how does who's at the top of this hierarchy? There's usually a Don. You know, who is it at the top that's got stuff on each increment down the path?
I'm going to go with Putin for $400, Alex.
Okay. and there's a part of me that goes, is there somebody above him that we don't even know his name yet? Could it be the Bilderbergs or the Illuminati? They're coming. And this is where you start sounding crazy.
Yeah, well, I mean, what we know as fact is that the Russians did hack the RNC at the same time that they hacked the DNC. And they just kept the data.
Of course they did. I actually had someone who told me that they only got the DNC. I said, if you believe that, you're a fool. Because, look, the one thing that you learn is you get information on everybody. Because at some point you get to blackmail everybody. Haven't you read any of those 1980s spy novels with Russians in it? They do that. They get everything.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of the question that's being posed now that people know that Trump and Sean Hannity share a lawyer is sort of, you know, are you being held to... basically this, like, extortion in some way or blackmail to where you basically have to sort of report the news on my side because I know all of this gossip about you.
And he has. That's all he's done. I mean, if you look at the last several days, Hannity's only been going on defending Trump and Cohen and the whole nine yards. So, you know, basically he was covering his own behind. If you're a Hannity listener or viewer, you've got to be questioning what he's been telling you all these years because it's really only in his interest.
Yeah, I mean, and not that Hannity probably wouldn't have been on the Trump bandwagon sort of regardless of whatever, you know, lawyer they share.
Right.
But I think in general, you know, as we look at the GOP Congress, I think that question extends to them as well. You know, is Trump in a position because of, you know, whatever information he received from Russian operatives that obviously, you know, the information that he wanted most at the time was about Hillary Clinton. But certainly, you know, did he find something out about, you know, his opponents in the GOP primary? Or members of Congress who basically have their hands tied in terms of, you know, the check and balance end of the equation. And again, not that they really want to be a check and balance in terms of what we've seen over the last year at this point, more than a year. But at the same time, is he basically holding something over their heads like, you're going to let me do whatever the hell I want to do? Because I have this information about you. And again, Trump is the type of person who throughout his lifetime has been very manipulative and has used these sort of mobster, gangster tactics to get people to do what he wants them to do. You know, it's a method of control. And thus far, you know, it's working for him in regards to the Republican Party for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting moment. I wanted to also get your thoughts on the bombing and the fact that today you had Nikki Haley on Sunday saying that sanctions were coming, The Russians were going to tight sanctions. We're doing this only to have Trump today go, eh, maybe not.
I feel like he throws Nikki Haley under the bus at least once a month.
Okay.
Is that just a function of what her job is? Like, you know, her job description, in the sense that, you know, no matter what she's going to do in terms of, like, foreign policy, there's no way that he's going to go along with that. And so she's kind of just on a fool's errand. Because every time she comes out with something, he says the complete opposite.
Because the weird thing is I don't think she's been horrible. I mean, I really kind of thought from the beginning she was just going to be John Bolton in a skirt.
Yeah.
She hasn't been.
Yeah, I mean she's essentially just ineffective, right?
Right.
Because you know anything she's trying to do that is somewhat diplomatic, you know, when you have instability in chief as your boss, none of that is going to go as planned. So I think she's just sort of in an unfortunate position. And again, you know, I think it's really uncanny in terms of these serious strikes that, you know, it's almost a year to the date from the last time he launched strikes against Syria.
Right.
It's really hard to tell the difference between the two strikes in the sense of, you know, neither of them really accomplished anything from even a, you know, military logistics standpoint. And Assad's regime is still, you know, they still have the same military capacity that they had prior to these strikes. And then again, like you said, I mean, you know, we see today that, you know, Trump again has no intentions of enforcing the Russia sanctions. And so, again, I just really think that in terms of Syria, his hands are really tied because he really can't do anything about Russia. And we're going to just continue to see that year after year after year.
Good point. Yeah. You know, and the highlight here is, you know, there was a Sean Hannity tweet for this where I'm sure you've seen this. He said, "Glad our arrogant president, who is enjoying his taxpayer-funded golf outing after announcing the U.S. should take military action against Syria." I'm sure he was wishing instead of writing "Glad our arrogant president," I'm sure he was wishing he wrote "Glad our arrogant President Obama."
Right.
Because this was back in 2013. You know, now being a cheerleader for the exact kind of thing. And look, you know, I had a problem with Obama and the red line, and I had a problem with all that as well, as I think we all should.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, again, you know, I was against it then. I'm against it now. I look at someone like Hannity who's just, well, it depends on who's doing it.
Yeah, it's just however the wind blows. And, you know, again, this is a president, quote unquote, asterisk, that needs like any sort of victory he can get, even if it's sort of an imagined one. And I think, you know, for him, the news cycle, you know, again, it's not just the Stormy Daniels thing. You have, James Comey and his book, which really, you know, had very high acclaim, obviously, even before its release, is very highly anticipated. And I think that Trump, in a lot of ways, was sort of hoping that Comey would be this figure that was sort of hated on both sides, like that the left would hate him enough, you know, because of whatever potential detriment.
Since you bring that up, let me ask you about that, because you were a big Hillary supporter.
Yeah.
You blame him? Was it his fault that she lost?
No, I don't blame James Comey for. I think that the people who are using James Comey as an excuse, like somehow, you know, anything he said in the last couple of weeks leading up to the election, that somehow something he said, you know, was just so powerful to move them over to the other side. I just kind of think that's a preposterous, you know, excuse, actually. I mean, you know, Trump was racist, he was sexist, he was ignorant, all of those things before James Comey said anything. And again, when you look, you know, statistically and demographically at who voted for Trump, people of color were not swayed by James Comey. You know, black women still voted 94% for Hillary Clinton.
But there is the diamonds and rust, or what are their names?
Diamond and Silk.
There you go.
I mean, yeah, but again, those voters have sort of always had, you know, a convenient excuse for why they've pulled the the lever for the GOP for the last 50 years. In 2000, it was that, you know, Al Gore didn't have a bubbly personality and, you know, they didn't like his lockbox.
And he didn't blink. You don't trust someone who doesn't blink.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and John Kerry, you know, with him, you know, they sort of sat there and, you know, fell for all of the Swift voting, et cetera. You know, that's sort of a swath of voters that in a lot of ways makes a lot of gullible choices at election time. And at the end of the day, a lot of those choices are already informed by bigotry. And ignorance, unfortunately, and so I don't necessarily think that's James Comey's fault. I mean, I still think those people were going to vote for Trump regardless.
Yeah, I just think there's part of me that goes, you know, look, I think Hillary lost because she didn't run on why vote for Hillary. In my neighborhood, all I saw on television and the radio was how horrible Trump was. I think that was her problem. You know, she didn't have a message that people got to hear. Not that she didn't have one. But she didn't have one that people got to hear because she ran, you know, intentionally on I'm not him and how horrible he is.
Yeah, but I think that if you belong to a group, a marginalized group in American society that can really appreciate how horrible Trump is, you don't need any more than that. You don't need somebody to come out and do flips and cartwheels and promise you, you know, legal weed and free college. I mean, you don't need all of that. You can actually look and go, this guy is a disaster. He's got the KKK on his tail. He's got neo-Nazis on his tail. He literally has anti-Semites in his administration, you know, people that he was talking about at that time that he wanted to have working very closely with him. So again, I think anybody who was still able to look at that on the Trump side and still go, you know, Hillary's just not doing it for me compared to that, that's a very privileged person who really doesn't understand how detrimental a Trump presidency would have been and probably to this day still doesn't understand how bad it has been for those marginalized groups.
Oh, and how bad it's going to get. But what's
right.
Interesting to me, and if you look at the reports out of the Comey book, he still doesn't want Trump impeached.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that Comey is, again, at the end of the day, you know, in a lot of ways, he has to kind of cover his own, you know what, and he's still a Republican. And Mueller is still a Republican, you know, and I still think that ultimately...
And Rosenstein and everybody else in the investigation.
Yeah, I mean, these are still people who, you know, ideologically still hold whatever views they hold. And just because, you know, all of this has happened, I don't think that they're going to suddenly not be conservative and not want their party to have control of the government. And so, you know, that doesn't surprise me that he feels that way. I think it even more makes the case for, you know, actual Republicans, to be able to sort of look at the evidence that's there, and to not necessarily see, you know, Comey as this like slimeball figure, who just wants blood and is just, you know, has this vendetta or something against Trump. I think that him saying something like that, that he's not necessarily feeling like, you know, everything that's happened warrants impeachment, I think in some ways is sort of a fig leaf to those people who are prone to believing that this is a witch hunt, you know, that this is just something that the Democrats are doing, you name it, X, Y, and Z, all of the conspiracies that they come up with. But at the end of the day, I mean, he made the testimony that he made. He knows the power of his testimony. He knows the power of his firing, and what that means in terms of obstruction of justice. So he can say that all he wants to, but ultimately, if the evidence leads where it leads, that's where it leads.
Interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see how this week plays out, because I really thought Friday Rosenstein was done. I really did, and I'm still waiting for that to drop, maybe with the next set of bombs. Who knows? While I've got you as a trained professional,
yes,
I need to take a point of privilege at some point.
Okay,
I had a weird thing happen to me.
Okay,
and it's one of these things that, you know, I'm not sure I really even wanted to talk about, but I have to throw it out because I have to know if I'm just being oversensitive.
Okay.
So I played baseball as a kid, you know, probably like 13 years of organized baseball.
Okay.
I've coached Little League for probably 12 years. So in 25 years of organized baseball, I have never at any point seen an umpire mandate that all the kids get on the foul line and recite the Little League pledge, which
Oh, wow.
I didn't even know existed. But evidently it did. And it goes, I trust in God, I love my country, and will respect its laws. I will play fair, I will strive to win, but win or lose, I will always do my best. And you go, okay, well, what's wrong with that? Probably nothing. But
yeah.
To me, it's these false displays of patriotism, of religiosity, this indoctrination. And I'm not sure if I'm overly sensitive or if this is just, again, you know, more of that creeping intrusion by the zealot class.
Yeah. Now, let me ask this question real quick about the referee. Is this a new referee? Is this someone who's been there for a while? Like, what's up with the ref?
I remember him from past years, and this had never come up before. It was the weirdest thing because, you know, I had a nice conversation before the game started, and I remembered him, you know, from coaching umpiring several games in the years past. But this seemed new. And it was none of the kids had seen it, and I found out that the pledge was put in the law, or you know, signed into proclamation by Dwight Eisenhower. It came in 1954, which again was part of that whole push of, you know, 1952 putting God on the money and in the Pledge of the Allegiance and all of this stuff. And,
yeah.
And I fear, and it's one of these things where, you know, you look at that time period of fear and hatred and all of that, and you match it to today, you know, am I being overly sensitive? Is it just, you know, it's a good, I believe in God. I do love the country, you know, all of that. But do I need to have these forced kind of moments where I have to, in public, pledge my allegiance to those things?
Right. No, I agree with you. I don't think you're being overly sensitive. And actually, this reminds me of the alleged war on Christmas, and like all of these people that are like, oh, you know, thank God, like we can finally say Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who was telling you couldn't say Merry Christmas? Like, when did that happen?
Because I got a bunch of really angry Merry Christmases. I go, when did Merry Christmas turn angry?
Well, it turned angry when these people started to feel like they needed to overcompensate for something. And essentially what is happening, I think, is there is, you know, a segment of our population that, you know, as demographics continue to change, as our society changes, as we become more globally integrated, and our cultures, you know, and ethnicities mix in this country, you know, people who were used to a certain time and place, where everything was a lot more, you know, homogenous, and, you know, for lack of a better word, white, you know, they feel like intimidated. They feel threatened. They feel like, you know, the way of life that they had grown so accustomed to is going away. And so, you know, the way that they're going to, you know, get that going again is going to be to, you know, make you say the prayer at school, you know, before all of the extracurricular activities. And now, you know, the Little League thing, and Merry Christmas, et cetera, et cetera. And even just the whole Trump presidency, right? I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, when the voters that voted for him, the really honest ones, you know, a lot of times, you know, what they're saying ultimately is this is a white man's country. And we think that Trump will make it a white man's country again. We think that he will ban all the Muslims. We think he won't let any Mexicans come over here anymore. He's going to build the wall. And that's sort of like a, you know, hey, we've let too much diversity into this country and we need to get it back to what it used to be when everybody looked like me and sounded like me and thought like me.
Yeah.
So I think that's just sort of a desperate last gasp that that they're trying to, you know, enforce on their children. But the children are way past us, I think.
The kids, whatever. And they just went back to what they were doing. And because I was thinking about that, I'm going, you know, when I was a kid, I'm sure I did a bunch of this kind of stuff. And it went in one ear, out the other.
Exactly.
It was long gone. I don't know that there's any long-term damage to the sane, rational kids. My problem is that then they grow up to be the umpire who says, everyone has to do it now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, and again, I think that that is happening, you know, because people are more understanding of not everybody wants to hear that or not everybody agrees with that, you know.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to start a big to-do because I'm sure there, you know, there are parents on my kids' team who, you know, they're rah-rah, that all that stuff, too, but...
Right.
It was just one of those things where you go, really? You have to do that here?
He did. I mean, you know, and in that moment, you know, it kind of draws more attention to that individual. Like, hey, what's going on with that guy? Than it does everyone else, you know, that's kind of looking at him funny.
Yeah, first time in a quarter of a century. So there you go.
Yeah, he's having a midlife crisis probably.
You know, there's probably a lot of truth in that statement.
Yeah, Trump is, you know, bringing them all out. The freaks come out at night. He's bringing them out.
Are you allowed to say that?
It's a song. I'm just quoting a song.
All right.
That's all that is.
Good stuff. Jade, I appreciate the time.
All right. You have a great week.
Thanks so much. She cracks me up. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.